Giles Brown.
GB. Not GQ.
And all things being equal, I'm going to be speaking with John Richardson of the Rubettes. He's talking about the Rubettes story and the new single, which is Born to Do It.
So many years ago, you came to watch our show as your child upon the dance floor. And up here on the stage, we played, we were all the rage, but now we're back again.
I played the latest track, which is Born to Do It, from the Sugar Baby Loves, which is a reincarnation, a reimagining, no, a reboot of one of perhaps one of the most iconic songs of the 70s. That particular song was Sugar Baby Love by the Rubettes. Delighted to say that joining me live on the line now, drums and vocals, is John Richardson himself. John, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, you lucky people with this beautiful weather you've got.
Are you not still lounging by a pool in the Hollywood Hills then, John? No.
Well, we've got. I'm lounging quite near to the pool, but not in the Hollywood Hills. No.
So, as the saying goes, doesn't time fly when you're having fun? When the press notes for this one dropped in, and they said 50 years ago, you know, Sugar Baby Love knocked ABBA off the top of the charts, I had to do a double take because it just seems like yesterday.
It does, yeah. But I have to say, to be honest, I mean, ABBA was so amazing, but their record had run out of fuel by the time that L1 came along, and that's how we knocked them off the top. Otherwise, I don't think we would have been able to do so.
For those who don't know sort of the backstory, where did you guys sort of come from with the Rubettes? Because we, remember, this is 73. This is the height of sort of Ziggy Mania and glam. Sorry, it's 74. You know, there's glam rock going on. There are people sticking stars on themselves, etc. Where did the Rubettes originally sort of spring from?
Well, I was booked to do a rock and roll album, because Polydor wanted to entice Shewaddy Waddy, who just won New Faces, which is a popular television talent show, and they felt, you know, this is the band for us. So they Tony Waddington and Wayne Bickerton, who was head of Polydor, very handy. They said, yeah, we want to do this rock and roll album. They booked me to do the drums and also some of the weaseled my way in to do the vocals afterwards as well. And they were trying to sign Shewaddy Waddy. So they went to Shewaddy Waddy's Sugar Baby Love and all the other songs. And to their surprise, Dave said, no, thank you very much. We've got our own ideas, which, of course, they did have. And they did very nicely out of it too. So then Polydor went to Carl Wayne from The Move.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember. Maybe a bit before your time. But he said no as well. So then they said, well, we believe in this song, the Sugar Baby Love, so we're going to put it out. So they put it out. And honestly, it got loads and loads of plays. And it sat at number 51 for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, kind of some other. The chart was resisting its entry. And then and there was a rule by Robbie Nash of Top of the Pops, which is the big selling television show at that time, that you had to be inside the 50 if you were to be offered a chance to appear. So all this time I was thinking, I wonder who this group is going to be. Because we were used to playing on other people's records, and they then appeared on television or on the radio or in interviews pretending to be the artist. So what happened was, do you remember, this town ain't big enough for the both of us?
Oh, of course, Sparks, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So Sparks were out at that same time, and they'd just gone inside the 50. So they were offered the new spot on, the new release spot on Top of the Pops.
Right.
They got there, then they, to their horror, poor things, and then he said, sods.
Something else,
So they then found out that they should have had a visa because they're Americans. So they got kicked off. So at the blink of an eyelid, they said, well, we've got to find someone. Okay, relax the 50 rule and call this group the Rubettes. Call them in to come. So I got a call from Polydor, from Andy Stevens, who was the T-boy at that time.
Right.
And he said, I said, oh, hi, Andy. How's that Rubettes thing doing? So they said, oh, it's doing pretty good. They've got Top of the Pops. So I said, oh, my God, who are they? And he said, it's you. Can you get down there tomorrow? So that's how it happened.
And, of course, Top of the Pop. That's probably the first time that a band's been on Top of the Pops without actually knowing they were the band then.
It was crazy. We had a quick meeting with Polydor at Stratford Place, which is just off of Oxford Street. We jumped in the cab off to White City, which is West London. And as we turned the corner, there was Take Six, which was the popular kind of clothiers at the time. And in the window was these white suits, white caps and brogue shoes.
Right.
Styled on the Great Gatsby film, which was out at that time. So I just dashed in with my American Express card and I bought six, God knows what sizes they were, none of them fitted us, six suits, six caps and six pairs of shoes. Then we got to Top of the Pops. Oh, my God, we've got to do something. We can't just stand there. So then we came up through the Shadows period and the Shadows did all those box steps. You may not remember that. But
yeah, I do.
So we did a box step thing. And because it was an androgynous time with Mark Bolan, Bowie and the rest, when it came to the talking part, I did a kind of camp sort of version of it. People take my advice with slobbery lips and all kinds of stupid things going on. And 2 weeks later, we were number one. We couldn't believe it. We thought it was just going to be a bit of a novelty thing, and that was it.
So,
but they were.
The question is, I mean, did you kind of know the words and everything then? Because obviously, and you've got to sort of look and make sure everybody. I mean, it's not live. I mean, it's live, but you're not playing. Presumably, there's a track playing, and you're lip syncing, as the saying would be, to it now.
Yeah. Did we know the words? Yeah, we learned the words because we were used to doing stuff like that, you know. And the only bit that I had to remember was bab shuari, bab shuari wari. That was my part for the singing. And for the talking, people, take my advice. If you love someone like that, you know. And it was much to learn, really. I just had to sort of pout and pose and, you know, ponce around, so to speak.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because people think, oh, 70s, because we're having a bit of a retro look at the 70s, and people think, oh, yeah, Bowie, Bolan, you know, all those Roxy music. But at the same time, there was Mudd, and there was Shwadi Wadi, and there was Alvin Stardust, and they were looking back to the 50s, which had only been sort of 3 decades before. And so, you know, and you said the steps, well, you know, Tiger Feet, for goodness sake. I mean, that's the ultimate sort of. And so whilst we had all these people going, I'm going to be an intergalactic sort of warlord, and join me in my spaceship, you had, you know, great music, like you guys, and then of course you had sort of other glam bands like Sweet, which we won't talk about because that was far too much trouble.
they didn't like us when we followed them across Europe quite a bit, right, on televisions, and as they walked past us, they, you know, do you remember we had one at number 7 called I Can Do It?
Yeah, I can do it, I can do it, I can really move from my head right down to my blue suede shoes. Not saying that not saying that I was an impressionable 7-year-old, but there you go.
Well, you know, as they walked past us, they would go, I can rock, I can nearly rock, I can nearly do it, they'd say to us. It was so stroppy. We were on the same record label, and they used to call. The guy who was looking after us from Polydor. They go, "Hey, Mr. Polydor, get the drinks in and stuff like that." And one day, the guy had enough of it, and he just said, "I am not Mr. Polydor. I'm Gunter something or other." And he said, "You speak to me nicely, otherwise you're off the show." And really, really, really gave them a talking to. And but they were always, you know, they were just. They're a great band,
Great. They're great live. They're a great band. Should we leave it at that before we get into far much trouble? I'm just thinking about Top of the Pops and how it could really make, I mean, if, you know, because everybody talks about, you know, Bowie doing Starman, but you guys come in at like 51 and the next thing, you're at the top, because if you were, the whole nation was watching Top of the Pops and half were being offended and half were really getting into it. So appearing on Top of the Pops, appearing on Top of the Pops absolutely made a band, didn't it?
Absolutely. It was pretty much a guarantee of your charting once. We didn't realise it was going to go at number one, but it was absolutely guaranteed. It was so powerful. I think about maybe 8 or 10 million viewers every week, guaranteed.
So what's it like to... I mean, when you went to number one, I'm dying to ask this question since I was a kid, do you know sort of... They obviously phone you up before, or are you listening to, gosh, it would have been Ed Sullivan or you know, David Hamilton when they're doing the rundown. I mean, are you stuck listening to your radio as I was with a small child with a tape recorder?
No, we know the night before, either the night before or early the morning of the chart. The chart was announced, I think, by Alan Freeman on Sundays,
Blimey.
I think.
Blimey.
Yeah. Because, you know, like that. And but I think that we knew slightly before because there was a national poll that was done of all the chart shops, because there were chart shops at that time. Some were and some weren't. But the ones that they had, and so we knew, but the actual being told was like an amazing experience. I think the chart positions were told... actually, on a Tuesday or something like that. Then Wednesday it was Top of the Pops. Thursday it was produced. Anyway, but the nation would sort of know on Sunday.
Yep.
But we would know before that. But it was such an incredible experience because, to be honest, even I'd given up the idea, because even though I was young looking, I looked like a teenager, but I was 27, and I already thought I just got to accept the fact that I'm never going to get in a popular band or album selling band, and that I'm just going to be a session musician for the rest of my life, which I was, you know, quite good at. I'd played on Kung Fu Fighting, Sugar Me by Lindsay DePaul, Dancing on the Saturday Night, Barry Blue, Born with a Smile on the Face. I had a lot of top 10 records. So, and it was quite well paid. It was like £12 or £13 for 3 hours, you know.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, that's it. And so it was such a surprise when this happened. And then the record company, Andy, called me up and said, "Hey, John, you awake?" And I just like jump up. Oh, yeah. What do you want? And he said, "You're number one." The feeling was amazing. And that happened for 4 weeks consecutively. It was very, very exciting. And all of a sudden, I was getting recognized on the street and all that stuff was amazing. And then that just started to pee me off a little bit after a while, you know, after a year of it. And then you had enough of it, really.
Yeah, but I mean, three million singles. I mean, that's outrageous.
Yeah, it did really well. And of course, it was a hit in every country of the world.
Now, here comes the thing. So you weren't a band a few weeks ago, and now you're a band, and you just said you followed Sweet around Europe, which must have pleased them greatly. So luckily you were all session musicians, because you had to go on tour, because the people wanted to see you live, didn't they? I mean, you'd be doing all these strange sort of European pop, you know, these pop shows, you know, in Germany, in Holland, in the Low Countries. But you had to sort of,
that's right,
you had to do some gigs eventually. So did you quickly run through a set list of what you could do?
So what we did, at the end of the year, we thought, listen, you know, we've got now, they're waiting to see, are we really a group or can we play or sing? And can we do the high notes? Because Alan wasn't the one who took over the lead, but he wasn't the one who sang on the record. That was Paul Da Vinci, or Paul Prury, as he was really known. And so people doubted whether we could do it or whether we couldn't, and we didn't know either. Our manager said, "Look, you know, you get yourself a big Pantechnic and half a dozen roadies, and I'll book a British tour for you, and you've got to just go out there and show them." So after a year, we had to do that. We were okay. I mean, it was amazing. Oh, that's that experience of having people screaming and frying themselves at the at the stage and all that, especially Scotland. Oh my God, Green's Playhouse, or the Apollo, as it was sometimes known, they were just not screaming like the Beatles, you know.
But you're in Bay City Roller Country. I mean, surely they would have thought, you know, that they took you to the heart, did they, John?
Well, the Scottish are an amazing bunch. If they like you, they like you, and they liked us. But Bay City Rollers came just slightly up, and so we'd had one or two hits before they appeared on the scene. And funny enough, we played with the remnants of the Bay City Rollers last year.
Yeah.
And we just had a record coming out, and Woody came up to me and said, "That song, it was called Honey Love. It was about, it's a love song masquerading as an eco song, or an eco song masquerading as a love song. And it's about how the bees are getting decimated in this country by insecticides, which are outlawed in Europe. And so it maybe you'll get to play it sometime. It's a nice record." So I played it to Woody, and Woody said, "If we'd have had this, we'd have continued having number ones. It's such a good song." And it was a pastiche of like Rubats meets Space Hit Rolls. But they were a nice bunch of guys. But what a sad story they had. Yeah. Such tragic. Did you see it on telly the other night?
I live in a cottage in the middle of nowhere, so I basically live in the 14th century. But people have been talking about it for a long time, because there was that whole, and I suppose it is during the 80s, I suppose people weren't so managed, but you know, like in the way that they were in the 70s. Because thinking about the way that you did matinees and you know, you did a matinee and an evening performance, it was full on, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was a difficult time. And people, well, you know, people have to space themselves out a little bit. God knows our what's her name? Taylor Swift gets on with Five Nights at Wembley.
But in a way, I suppose, because they look after the artist. I mean, I think since because she's a business investment now, she's got her entourage. So everything that she needs is with her. She is protected. Whereas before, you guys, I just sort of sent out in a bus or a van or a car, and you may have a number one single, but you've still got to fight your way through to the stage door.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't easy. The traveling is obviously one of the most difficult things, and one of the biggest killers of either in plane or in car of many great stars like Buddy Holly and beautiful Otis Redding,
yeah,
and Eddie Cochran in this country. He died at the end of the tour in a car. So all the traveling and the hanging about is the pits. The playing bit is wonderful, of course.
So tell us a little bit about then, because, you know, fast forward to where we are now, and I played the single before you joined us. There is, I mean, Mark Kermode, the TV critic, you know, the film critic, Kermode and Mayo, is a huge fan and thinks the Rubettes are possibly the best band who'll ever walk the planet.
Nice, yeah. He was, I heard that he was a fan. It's quite, when you think, you know, how critics can be scathing, especially film critics. They really know how to mince their words. And to think when someone said he liked us, I thought, my God, how wonderful that is. You know, we got lucky on that one.
Yeah, but I mean, most of those guys from the 70s, there is because it's the music to my childhood. You know, like I said, in 75, I was I was seven. Okay, but I remember all that music. I also remember.
Wow.
I also remember the Wombles. But I just quoted you. You know, I can do it. I can really move from my head around to my blue suede shoes. And I can't do my seven times table, John. So it just shows that certain things stick with you. And there's an affection. So releasing new stuff just shows that there is, you know, not to get too American, but there is the love for you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And you've been so kind to have us on today. I really appreciate it.
So tell us about this new single then and the new incarnation then of this sort of glam rock thing celebrating 50 years.
So I don't know how glam we are, but we're more like rock. But not glam. It's me and myself and Mickey, the original bass player, and we have two other. One of our Rubettes producers is the keyboard player, Steve Everington, and the lead guitar, lead singer. Although we all take lead, is Mark Wright, who plays with, funny enough, Mud 2, the Trems,
Blimey.
And a number of the 70s bands now. You know, he appears in a few different ones. So what happened was when Alan, the lead singer, left for Australia, we decided to continue on. And then we had a little bit of a court case with him because he said that there's no way that we should be allowed to, even though I started the band, to use the name. He wanted the name. He won the name so in court. So we decided to carry on anyway. And then we put out, just to give to test the water, we put out Honey Love, which charted in the prestigious UK charts called Heritage Charts by Mike Reed, run by him.
Yeah.
And the Legacy Charts as well. We were 4 and 5 in those charts respectively. So then we came to this year and we thought, well, it's our 50th year anniversary. We should mark it. So we tried to do something that was kind of a pastiche of I Can Do It, but instead of I Can Do It, Born to Do It, which was a nod to 50 years ago, you know, so many years ago you came to watch our show as you danced upon the dance floor. And up there on the stage, we played, we were all the rage. But now we're back again to play for you once more. And away it goes. And it's another like I Can Do It type of thing, a bit rockier. So, and it's gone down well. I'm not saying we're charting with it, but people are getting to know us and like us, and we're kind of rebuilding the name. We're now called Sugar Baby Loves, as you know. We're not allowed to call ourselves the Rubettes, but we're still standing, as Elton says.
And what's it like? I mean, going back on stage now. I mean, have you done any shows, or has this just been in the studio?
Just mainly a studio. We've done a couple of shows in Germany, went down well, and a couple in Belgium. We're doing one in Belgium next Sunday in Brie, the famous place where they make their Brie cheese. You know,
Looking forward to the rider for that one. Then, so obviously cheese is on the rider, obviously.
Definitely, yeah. So, and also, you know, in terms of myself, hopefully I can come on in a few weeks' time. I've got my autobiography, which is quite fascinating, to be honest, of all the things that I've been up to and all the things that have happened to me before, during the Rubettes, and after, which has been perhaps even more interesting.
Well, we'll get you back on to talk about that, because that's a story. If people want to download, you can download the single via our own virtual bookstore. You can find the link on there, listeners. If people want to find out some more information about John and about the new incarnation, where's the best place to find you? Is there a website?
You've got a website, yeah. Sugarbabylovescom, I think it is.
I think it is that one. So, and a marvelous website it is. I'm going to play out with Sugar Baby Love, because why not? John, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. I've got a few bits and pieces before I close the show, but great for you to join us. Take care, and thank you for bringing back so many memories. And I didn't think I could remember the lyrics to that song, but it just goes to prove that I can do it. It was a massive hit on 1 7-year-old somewhere in the 1970s. John Richardson, thank you very much for your time today.
And thank you for yours.